Okay, today is Saturday, August 1st. The time is really flying by. Tomorrow, I'm going to have Janet Bosker speak about her life, which has been pretty exciting. So, let's wait for that, okay? Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
All right, so go back. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so here we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's August 2nd, 2020. And talking to Janet Bosker about her life. And I'm trying to figure this out a lot of the ways and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to stop this and see. Hey, Janet.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
I'm going to start over.
No, not a bit. I can always edit all of this out happily.
Okay, good.
So when I was doing this the other day with my granddaughter, she kept grabbing the microphone. I'm glad you're not grabbing the microphone because it makes a lot of noise. But she felt like she was, yeah, she was like on some sort of television show trying to win some prize. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you about early on. You have had success, as I equate it. And success is not money. It's not necessarily you're winning a Nobel Peace Prize or anything like that. Success is its own reward sometimes. I don't even know where I made that up. But anyway, so I wanted to ask you about your childhood and growing up. Where'd you grow up?
Memphis, Tennessee.
Hmm, interesting. So that's kind of a artistic city, as a matter of fact, with music and stuff like that.
Yeah, but, you know, I was little.
Right.
We moved when I was 15. So
where'd you move?
Moved to Greensboro, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Went there my sophomore and junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Wilmington, Delaware, where I spent my senior year of high school.
Why did you move?
Oh, my dad worked for for DuPont, for a large company, and he was climbing that corporate ladder.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So they said, you need to go to Wilmington if you're going to go further in your career. And so that's what he did. Went to Wilmington.
Which is what dads did in these years.
In the late
60s. You had
60s.
A traditional family?
Yes. Sort of. Mother, father, church going, three brothers, everybody, did the right thing and put on their Sunday best and looked good. Did what we were told, so to speak.
Right.
Well, yeah.
So then tell me about after high school and stuff, what did you do?
Well, my senior year was so tough because not only were we moving during that time to a different state, we were moving from the culture of the South to the culture of the Northeast, even though I guess Delaware is below the Mason-Dixon line. But it was just... I remember one of the first things we did when we got there was my dad took us to the Hagley Museum in Wilmington, which had a lot of Civil War history and history of the Brandywine Valley and that area. It was a real pretty area. But, you know, we'd grown up in the South where, you know, we were on the gray team. And all of a sudden,
we're on the blue team.
You're riding along in the bus, and they're talking about those wicked Confederates, and we're going, oh, no. Right.
That is something we Southerners have to live down.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Correct. And
wrong team.
Right. So then in school, in the South, this is the way it was. I don't know if it's that way up there now, but... You know, you'd be walking down the hall and you'd say, hey, how you doing? And they would look at you like, what is your problem? Why are you talking to me? I don't know you. So it was tough. And anyway, I took to my bed, so to speak.
Oh, fainting couch,
so to speak. I did. I was out of school for 6 weeks. In the fall, and then by the time I graduated, I had met my future husband at a party, and that changed everything.
Okay.
Because I was going to come back to Greensboro, to Greensboro College. I'd been accepted.
You were?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Yeah, and
Now, was that Greensboro College? It wasn't UNCG.
It was Greensboro College.
Okay.
And it was the first year that it was co-ed. It used to be Greensboro Women's College.
Oh, yeah, the Women's College.
Right.
My French teacher went there, and she called it, they used to call it Women's College, WC, mm-hmm. which in Europe, WC is water closet, which means bathroom.
Yeah.
And she said when she told French students she went to the WC, they laughed at her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, oh, okay, that's yeah. great.
Yeah, so I was accepted there and was not going to go, changed my mind at the last minute, and went.
What were you going to pursue?
Art.
Oh.
I was in the art program. I was going to be an art therapist. That was my long-term plan. I was going to be an art therapist. Right. It was the only thing I could think of that made any sense.
So, stop right there. Did you dabble in art in high school?
Yeah.
Okay, so you did.
Yeah.
How did you dabble?
Well, I took art, when I was in the seventh grade, an art teacher from the high school came over, maybe it was in eighth grade, and she drew this profile of a face on the chalkboard, and she asked everyone to draw it, and then she came around and said, you should take art, you should take art, you should take, and I was one of the ones that she picked. And so I did. I took art all through high school and won a Scholastic Gold Key Award.
Shut up.
When I was
excellent.
In
that was a thing. That was a thing.
It was in ninth grade, I think. Yes, it was before we left. No. It was when I was in Greensboro. I must have been in 10th grade. Anyway, so I'd already had some encouragement in that area. Mm-hmm. So.
Did your family encourage this? Your mother or your father encourage this?
My father was absent a lot. He was just not around that much. My mom would say stuff like, you need a career. You'll never be satisfied if you just have a family.
Okay. Wise words.
Right. And I think she was probably, not that happy in her role.
Speaking for herself.
Right.
First person.
But they, of course, wanted me to go to college. And have an education, and I had two older brothers that were already in college. All three of my brothers graduated. But
did your brothers have any art in their background? Were they artsy in any way?
My older brother,
that means music or whatever, you know.
No, we were not. Actually, I played piano. They all thought I was going to go and be the next maestro, whatever.
Why did I not know you didn't play you played piano?
Because I don't know, I haven't had one for. Greta, get down here. Stay. Come on.
Good we girl. Are now disciplining the dog.
Good girl. So, I played piano from seventh grade on. When I was in fifth and sixth grade, I took tap dancing and acrobats and loved it. And my parents, my father particularly, thought that was not appropriate. And so he preferred piano. So he bought a piano and I took piano from
Sad face.
Yeah. Yeah. Tap dancing in the attic didn't really go over with him. But that's what I did. I practiced in the attic.
Wow.
I wouldn't scratch up the floors.
That's good. I really like that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, sadly, families...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't know and don't encourage and stuff.
Right. So what I really wanted to do was take a year off and join the Peace Corps between high school and college.
Wow.
And my parents laughed at me and said, "Oh, you'll never make it in that." So I went to school for 2 months. Got pressure from the boyfriend to come home. He was lonely, and so I did. After 2 months,
so you were at Greensboro.
Mm-hmm, I was in
Greensboro.
Then
he pressured you to come home, and you did.
Right.
And then what happened?
Then I got married. And then I got pregnant.
Oh.
And then I had a baby.
And a couple followed after that.
That's correct.
So you got married at 18?
I was actually 17. I turned 18. We were married on November 25th, and my birthday was November 28th.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, I was very stubborn. My parents were like, you can't get married without our consent. And I said, I'll just wait a few days.
You were a bad girl.
I was bad.
Yeah. Well, not too bad. So anyway, so you, as I understand it, how did the marriage go? And did it contribute to your growth in any way? I mean, did your husband encourage your art? There's a whole bunch of questions here, but I don't want to.
No, I mean, my husband was, he was also very young. He was 20. And came from a kind of a rough family. And, you know, he, we didn't really know anything other than the traditional husband-wife role kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't think any of his siblings went to college. Maybe Paula did. I don't know. But anyway, they went into the service. That's what they did.
Why did he go into the service?
He was in the National Guard, actually, to avoid going to Vietnam.
Good move.
Right. And then he, God, what a nut. He, like, went AWOL and quit going because he didn't want to cut his hair.
Oh.
So he was continually afraid that they were after him. You know, they'd be peeking out the windows and... I mean, just like he was
paranoia will destroy you.
So somehow or rather, he got that worked out, and he would have to go away for guard weekends, and I would put his hair in pin curls, and he bought a wig so he wouldn't have to cut his hair.
Oh my God! Yeah. That is priceless. Priceless.
So being the good wife that I was, I you know, helped him do that. Anyway, you know, I just stayed home with the kids and. You know, made the money stretch as far as I could. And what I did for myself at that point was, because I was home all the time and I didn't have a car, and I joined one of those mail order art schools.
Oh, yeah, where you drew the picture and they'd let you know if you were accepted, sort of thing.
Right. You took this test to see if you had an aptitude.
The test to take your money.
And then... You would follow these assignments and you'd mail your artwork off to them and then they would send back comments and stuff like that. So I did that to entertain myself.
It could be worse.
You know, the marriage lasted 9.5 years and was not very stable, but with 3 children.
So you had 3 children by the time you were how old?
23.
Wow.
23.
Mm-hmm. And so, what happened? What did you do? Mm-hmm. I think there was a defining moment here.
Well, yeah, he would get violent. He drank a little more than he should have, and we had one particular. It's a long story, but was just, you know, I kind of it was a wake up call for me. I was like, okay, if I stay here, I'm gonna die.
That's a really big red flag.
Yeah.
Well, at least you figured that out.
Yeah.
And you made a move.
Right. And he was becoming a little, you know, I hate to say abusive, but I guess that would be the emotionally abusive with the kids. And I kept thinking, either I'll die or my kids will grow up and I won't even like them. Mm. So anyway, we left and came back to North Carolina. And I immediately enrolled in Central Piedmont and decided advertising design was my calling in life, and I was going to do that. Lived with my folks for 1.5 years.
But that was fun?
Not really.
Shocking. All right, I totally get that. So, no, it wouldn't be fun, especially.
Although my mother was very supportive, and she took care of the kids, and my father was his typical judgy kind of,
yeah,
you're not good enough, you're never going to make it, you know,
right,
kind of guy. And
do you think, and I don't want to go here, and I might even edit this out.
Oh,
do you
good.
Think that your father's personality, his way he treated you, how he judged you, do you think that had any bearing on how you chose men?
Oh, good God, yes, but... Interestingly enough, I don't think I ever even thought about that until the last few years.
Well, I get that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, my father was a successful, mm-hmm. respected, active in the church, all the things that you think that you would want. But what I didn't really understand was the fact that he's was basically unavailable emotionally, mm-hmm. I think, to my mother. And basically to me too. I mean, not that he was mean to me or anything like that. He wasn't, but he just wasn't there, you know? Right. He just wasn't involved. I don't remember having any conversations with him other than disciplinary.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's like a dad cop.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, the only time you meet a cop is when they're pulling you over. Yeah. I'm like, really? Okay. Yeah. Well,
I mean, that was growing up. I mean, later on, I pretty much would say what I thought to him, and you know.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't want you to answer it, but since I have daughters as well, and just think about this question. Maybe we'll go back to it later on. Okay. Did you ever marry your dad? And what I mean by that is, did you marry or date a man who is very much like your dad? And because a lot of times they say that girls...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know...
They're working something out with their...
They're marrying their dad, so they are trying to work something out. So just mm-hmm. think on that. But anyway, so you went into this marketing art thing at Central Piedmont.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how did you do? And then what happened?
It was great. I mean, I felt like I was coming alive. Like, oh, there is a life after children, you know. I was just so excited to be, you know, exploring my own talent, kind of a thing. But I was very insecure, very, very insecure about it. But, you know, I made really good grades and all that stuff. I had some great instructors that were really supportive. And, you know, I mean, I did not finish because the situation at my parents was getting more strained because, you know, the burden of the children was on my mom. And so eventually I had to get out of that situation because I was doing school, trying to work a part-time job and trying to...
Where were you working a part-time job?
When I first came to Charlotte, I went to South Park and just put in applications at all the stores, and I got hired at Sears.
Oh, wow.
So I worked at Sears and Roebuck in the intimate apparel department.
Ooh, ladies unmentionable.
Yo, baby. I was there for 6 weeks, and they promoted me to carpet and cushion vinyl floor.
Excellent, excellent. But then you went on and you got a job with a photographer in town, correct?
Right, right. I quit that job because that was when I was getting a lot of pressure from my parents saying I wasn't home enough and wasn't spending enough time with the kids and wasn't keeping my room clean.
Oh, for God's sake!
You know, just crazy stuff. And I was in drawing class one day and the drawing teacher said, oh, a photographer had called looking for someone who could draw to do the artwork on the portraits. And I thought, well, I could do that. And it was right on the way home. And I thought, well, they said, well, here's his phone number. So I went and got that job.
Full-time or part-time?
Just part-time in the afternoon after class.
That was not bad. That's
mm-mm.
good.
And
did it allow you to move out yet?
No, well, it's kind of complicated. I took that job in May, and by July, my stubborn little self had, you know, decided that I could not handle living at home with my parents anymore. At that time, I was still getting some child support from Tommy.
You did get some child support.
This was a year and a half after I had left, so... So what I did was I found an apartment, moved out of the house that summer, and about a month after I'd moved, my ex-husband realized I was never coming home.
Oh, so he had
hopes. And he quit paying child support.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So in effect, this was bribery. He was
right. So then my rent check bounced, and I was like, oh, no. And that's when I decided I needed to, because then I had a part-time job, going to school, had three kids that I was fully responsible for. Something had to go. So school went, and I decided the way to make it work was to learn how to shoot weddings, and that opportunity was offered to me. And so great. That's when I went full-time at the studio and started. That's how, that's how it started.
All right, let's continue on, Janet.
Oh, God.
So we were just talking about you'd begun your photography business.
Mm-hmm.
Just begun your photography business.
1994.
Yeah. 1994, okay. And did you find a place? How'd you do that?
I came home from work one day, and I looked at my three children, and I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm giving away the living room furniture, and I'm turning the living room into a camera room, and I'm quitting my job.
Huh. What did the kids say?
Leslie said, oh, well, that's good. That'll be good. Bob didn't seem to be fazed either way, and Jennifer was worried that if she had a date, they'd come to the front door and see that we didn't have any
furniture.
What was she going to say?
Kids, can't live with them, can't kill them.
That's exactly what they're...
It's about them.
It was funny.
All right, so you did that.
Did
it take some investment? I mean, did you have some money to put in this?
My father had passed away the year before, and I got a small inheritance, and I thought, well, I can live off of that if I don't do any business. At least I've got that money in the bank, and I can always get another job.
Yes.
Well, I never needed the money.
Good.
Sort of like, I guess being a photographer is like being a hairdresser. Your clients seek you out. It's more of a word of mouth thing. So
yeah.
So I was booked pretty solidly, pretty quickly.
So you had built up your reputation.
Right. Yeah. So that was pretty good. I was shocked, but and then a friend of mine, I'd done a lot of research, and I worked with a small business people out at UNC and written a business plan and all that before I, made the decision to leave. I've done a lot of research. Everybody I talked to was like, oh, your demographics and stuff. You should be able to be successful, no problem. And I was just not believing it, but it did work out. So it was a good thing.
How long was it before you knew that you could do this? I mean, you had to have been shaky at the beginning, thinking, is this going to
work? I was shocked that my income was actually surpassed what I had been making the first year.
Oh, well then.
Yeah, I could not believe it. It was like all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, as I struggled to raise three kids on my own, I had a little extra money, and I couldn't believe it.
Were you working more or less than it?
Less.
Was?
I didn't have the responsibility that I had. It was just me, and I could go out and shoot a wedding, and then before I knew it, the girls who got married were calling me to do their baby pictures, and I was like, really? And it just sort of built over the years. I mean, a friend of mine that I talked to who was in photography, not that I never worked for him or anything, but I, you know, asked his advice, said it would take 6 years to establish. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'll never make it. But about 6 years later, I rented a retail space and moved out of the house, moved my business into a...
Where was that?
It's on 7th Street.
Oh, I remember mm-hmm. that 7th Street location.
Yep. And so it turned out to be true. And of course, then 9/11 happened. And
don't we all remember
that? And then it was like, oh no. And but my landlord was a gem. He was so sweet. He came over and said, look, I don't want you to worry. I'm not going to raise your rent. We're going to get through this. And so that was really nice. And about 6 years later, I bought a place and moved the studio into that place. So it took a while, but I was blessed. I'll put it that way. I felt very fortunate. But I did work really hard, especially after I had overhead. That was a little harder to manage, but you know, it was great.
There you go. All right, so let's continue.
Hello.
Hit it, Janet.
Okay, so career-wise,
yeah.
As I got established and, you know, was working a lot, I got more involved on the national level and became the national level of our trade organization, Professional Photographers of America.
Okay.
I don't know if this is relevant or not.
It is relevant.
And I became a national councilman and an international juror, and that afforded me opportunities to travel to, you know, all over the United States, judging, you know, print competitions and that kind of thing, and really kept me motivated to experiment and not do the same old thing a lot. I was very involved in that. And so continued success, you know,
But you put in the work.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked really hard at it. And then I'm, you know, I've been doing this for, by then, 25 years.
Wow.
20, yeah. And, you know, life happens, and 2008, the recession came, and I really, really struggled through that because photography is such a luxury item that, you know, people just didn't have the money to spend on portraiture. And I'd had clients that I'd known forever call me and say, we just don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, we have this new baby. And I would say, bring the baby,
right,
and let's do the pictures and you can order later. And somehow we made it all through that. And then somewhere...
Well, what about digital stuff?
Oh, good God, that had happened. I guess I finally gave in and started with digital in 2005, 2006.
Well, I do remember at your old house on Kelford, you had your own studio out back.
Dark room.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. And once the digital, you know, in the beginning, digital was not, it wasn't good quality imagery, and I couldn't be satisfied with it, and I thought I would never, ever give up my black and white film cameras, but the time came when, you know, for weddings, you know, you were limited by the type of film you put in the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, I took a class one summer. I was involved in a professional school in Raleigh, and took a class from a man who was somewhere up north. And he did a demonstration and did 100 poses in like 5 minutes or something. It was insane. And it just blew us all away. I was like, okay, I have to have a digital camera. And I made that change. And once I made the change, you know,
right,
you've got, it was a big learning curve and very expensive. And
Let me ask you and go back just for a second. Mm-hmm. So you had a life at a studio where you were hired. What kind of camera did you use at that studio? And then we'll go on to your own personal preferences. What kind of camera did you use?
You know I'm not an equipment person.
I know, but you know the difference between a Nikon and a whatever. I mean, I'm reading Diane Arbus,
mm-hmm.
and she started off with a Nikon, mm-hmm. 35mm standard, everybody had it. Mm-hmm. And then she went on to a Rolleiflex.
That's what we used, Rolleiflex, twin lens.
There you go, twin lens. Mm-hmm. I remember her saying that.
We used a twin, all
and
of
she
us.
Said it wasn't as grainy as the Nikon. She called the Nikon grainy.
It was got a smaller negative.
Ooh, you said you weren't technical. Alrighty then. That was part of it. So
Right. And yes. So the bigger negative gave you better image quality. And of course, the lenses were Schneider lenses, I believe. And planar lenses on the Rolleiflex, and those were superior as far as the glass was concerned. Mm-hmm. So we all shot the weddings with the Rolleis, and I continue to use a Rolleis until I changed over to digital.
I used a
Nikon 35mm for black and white wedding reception pictures, but never the important pictures.
Ooh, girl.
So then, once we made the switch to digital, I went with Canon, because Canon in the beginning was slightly better quality than the Nikon. The Nikon was grainier, had a little more noise. So I've stuck with Canon since then.
Is grainy noise?
Well, noise is a digital term.
Oh, and
grainy
digital. I didn't know
is
if you
a
were
film
talking.
Term.
Okay, I didn't know if you were equating one with the other. I didn't know
it's
you were all
kind of the same
digital.
Thing.
Okay,
yeah,
I get
except
it.
For one of, well, terminology is interesting, don't you think?
I do.
So anyway, yes, and I've been digital ever since. And when I made that decision, I took all my film cameras and just, well, I did save three Rolleis because I thought my kids might want them someday.
Yes, I'm sure they'll make lamps.
They'll be great bookends.
Yeah, they will be great bookends.
But, so I've been a Canon shooter ever since. And at this point in my career, used to be you would say you'd buy a good camera and shoot with it for years and make a living. And now I say you just continually upgrade your equipment.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to stay current. Because everything changes, but anyway, it's all good. And
so, what would you say to somebody who was starting out in the business? And
I would
say,
go get a job,
like at a restaurant, to support your habit. Is that what you're saying?
I would say get a college degree and figure something else out. It's just
now, really,
so competitive.
Would you? Well,
absolutely, I would not. I would not encourage. It's just really hard with the cell phone technology and everything that's going on.
What
it's
would
crazy.
That degree be in?
Business.
Wow.
Business and marketing,
Yeah.
That would be a...
You had to learn it on the fly. You had to learn it.
Yeah. I had a little bit of a background because of the advertising design classes that I took. So, I knew a little bit about, typefaces and stuff like that, so I could design my own marketing materials and that kind of a thing. But it's just really hard, I think, to make a living in photography. Most people are part timers now, or they've married well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if they're photographers like they used to be.
No. There are not.
It's because of digital. Digital's
right.
good, digital's bad for
right.
for business. So people aren't like, I'm going to be a photographer. I'm going to be a Diane Arbus, or I'm going to be a whatever a male photographer is. So that's a tough business. You can't go into that. And
it's
it's not like, what's her face that shoots for Vanity Fair?
Leibowitz, Annie.
Yes,
Leibowitz.
Annie Leibowitz. You know.
You know, I'm not saying that you can't make it work, and I have made it work all these years, and I continue to make it work because mm-hmm. it's what I do. But I think that you have to really be, you have to have a niche. You have to be really interested in quality work because, for most people, you know, the cell phone is good enough unless they're really interested in high quality imagery. Right. So, you know, that it's just a smaller market now, I think, than it used to be.
Right. And I'm not sure, just from my own and very low end thing, ideas about photography, but my phone keeps binging. What's good enough for me is not good enough for you, you know?
Correct.
But I do remember I took those pictures of those barbershops, and you went, oh my God, you picked these with a cell phone?
Yeah, I know.
Now, they weren't, they're not super quality, but they're good enough.
Right, and they're not good enough. If they're not big enlargements, you know, if you're not going for a huge picture, it just doesn't make as much difference.
Right.
You know?
So are people still ordering big pictures for over the fireplace?
Yes, and I do not want to say that is not a good thing.
You do not have to say that. It is a good thing for some people. And that's,
it is, and it's all
totally
about
okay.
It's all about
it's
what
totally
you like.
Okay. Yes.
And I love those people that love the big portraits. Right. I do. It's really
then,
fun to see your work really big. It's really fun to see. And I think also, here's just a little personal story. I have grandchildren, right?
Yeah.
So my three children have very different ideas about the value of photography.
I can't wait to hear.
I know. I think they value it, but the contrast in their attitudes is just sort of like a little petri dish of what's going on in the world. My oldest daughter just absolutely would not miss a year having her family photographed, and she loves it.
Right.
I've done paintings of her children that she has large paintings on the wall, and they're wonderful, and I love them, and she loves them. My son, while I think he enjoys them, when his little boy was born, and you know, I'm wanting to photograph every phase of his life, so one day he goes, don't you think this is a little over the top, Mom?
That's so funny.
But the other day, his son, who is now going to be 7 years old this month, looked at me one day and he goes, so, Grandma, when are you going to do the picture that looks like a painting of me?
Oh, see? Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said about kids like to see pictures of themselves.
Absolutely.
And it makes them feel valued, and it, you know, so I mean, I think there's a real value in it. I certainly don't want to, you know, discourage that, because I think it's really important. It's really important, especially when they're young, because they grow up so fast. So, yeah.
Wow. So, I always begin every sentence with so, because I think it elaborates in so much.
So, we're going to do that painting of Stella.
That would be fabulous. Seriously, fabulous. Hold that thought.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell somebody who has an artistic eye, who's really interested in photography, and who's 21 years old and finishing their last year of college?
It's a hard way to go. But if you love it, if you really, truly love it and are passionate about it, it can be done. I mean, I'm not going to say it can't be done. It can be done. But it is not.
What should they start shooting?
It's not an easy
Should
way.
They be, you know.
They should get all the education they can get,
right.
Professional level.
Right.
I mean, you know, you can get a lot on the internet, blah, blah, blah. But you really do need. I could not have made it without the professional organizations that I belong to.
But there's so many photographers who were, you know, who's the one who shot all the mountains out west? And
Ansel
know,
Adams.
Ansel Adams. There's the ones who want to be.
He was dirt poor, by the way.
Oh, there you go, dirt poor. But he had a passion and he loved it. You could tell. He was hired by the government. That's why he was probably kind of poor. But that's okay. But he loved it. He loved it. There's no doubt about it. I think his shots, his photographs show he loved what he was shooting. So, poor, as you well know, you weren't wealthy, you know.
No, not at all.
That's a big shake of the head. No, I was not wealthy. So I've got another question after this one, and it's about what you do to enhance your knowledge of the profession. So the question is, so you say get as much education as you can, and which goes along with the question I was going to ask, it seems like you went on to take every single class you could.
Absolutely.
And you didn't just get onto this photographer's board. You had to work hard to get onto this and get elected to it.
Right.
And your work had to stand up to criticism and acceptance in your field.
Absolutely. Which was really important. I mean, it's so much easier to please a client than it is to please your peers.
Oh, God, yes.
So, you know, that part really makes you continue to learn and grow. And you just have to be able to take the criticism. I mean, if you wear your heart on your sleeve, it's hard on you. And that's something that you have to remember when you're judging or critiquing someone's work. This is the best image they've ever made. And you have to be gentle.
Yeah, well, it's like your team when you were working as a young person and your whole group were critiquing each other, but you said you all wanted to succeed and you weren't trying to hurt each other. You weren't climbing to the top to push the other one down.
No.
But in judging, it's slightly different. I mean, your critique of some younger person or some other person might not be taken the same.
Well, you have to just be careful and, you know, find something good to say.
Right. Not crush their spirit.
Not crush their spirit. Right. And I certainly didn't mean earlier to say that you shouldn't pursue this if it's what you want to do. Because you can make a living. But, you know, art photography is really hard to make a living, I think. I mean, I did all that. I dragged that 4x5 camera across the desert and was gonna be the next Ansel Adams. And we went to New York to that gallery show that time.
Did.
And I was like, man, I can do better with black and white high end baby pictures than I can with fine art. And I don't have to drag that 4x5 camera across the desert.
Well, that is. I guess you do have that thing between, do I want to live and eat food and have a home, a place to live?
Right.
Or do I want to be an artiste?
Right. It's.
Can I have the best of both worlds?
It's not easy.
No.
So, anyway, of course, nothing is, I guess. I decided a long time ago that to be successful, you really have to just work really hard at it.
It sounds like you did. So, what do you want your family to know about you and this work? I mean, if your children were, let's just say you'd gone on to your great reward, to that great camera studio in the sky, that great digital, what, if your children were talking about you and saying, my mom was ...
Well, rather than that, I would like them to understand that they were the reason that I worked so hard to be successful. My kids, I wanted them to have a nice home and have, you know, a good life, and that was very motivating to me. These days, I don't, you know, I have some jobs that I still continue to do, and I love them. But I certainly don't want to be out shooting a wedding every weekend, because I just want to live my life differently, and I have branched out into other things.
And yeah, I want to talk about that. So, Well, that's interesting. We might go back to that question about what your kids might say. So, so you are near.
I want them to say she meant well.
She came in peace.
Even though she was never home, she meant well.
I know, she meant well. And see, that is the balance, isn't it? Do we know
it really
that?
Is.
Yeah,
it
and
really
the kids
is.
Don't know. So,
yeah.
So you're kind of, are you, would you consider yourself near retirement or thinking about retirement?
I'll never retire.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, I'd love to. You know, it's such a double-edged sword because you think, oh, I want to retire. I just want to hang out. I don't. Then what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
So I find that if I sit around, I'm not as happy as if I'm doing something. But the difference in being semi-retired or whatever is that it's not, you don't have to kill yourself anymore. You can take a little time and explore the areas that you're interested in or the areas that make you happy, that make your heart sing, and you don't have to be engaged in the grind of turning out work week after week after week.
I get that.
That's what I think anyway.
Right. So,
but what do I know?
Well, you're also broadening your horizons. You're doing some paintings.
Right, right. I tend to take
Why is that? Why are you doing?
Because it makes me happy.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, there's this place, and understand that when I'm taking pictures, when I'm doing a family session or a child session, or, you know, everything leaves your mind and you are in that moment and you're capturing that expression or that look or that mood or whatever, and you do, or I do, I still get into that mode where everything goes away. But with painting, it's like I can stay in that place for a long time.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because you get to a place where you're struggling, 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 and then it all starts to make sense and come together, and it's just really fun.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So it was always my plan to later in life be a painter. So when I traveled, I took all these pictures as reference material. So that's sounds corny, but it's true.
I think we're going to end right here.
Okay.
Right now.
Perfect.
All right.